Junkraft, a noble mission. A decade ago, Marcus Ericsson jumped aboard a boat made of plastic bottles to make a Pacific crossing and to make a point about marine debris. What was he thinking? Well, what he thought was a good cause, to draw attention to the garbage patch and to find a solution to the growing marine plastic pollution. He's in Hawaii to appear at a film screening of the documentary of the voyage tonight at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. He reflected on the nerve-wracking trip, as no one knew for sure if the boat would hold together for the trip, but it did. And a decade later, he joins us to tell us he's encouraged and hopeful for the future.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. We sailed from L.A. to Hawaii on a raft made of 15,000 plastic bottles. No motor, just sort of drifting along. It took us 3 months to get there. That was exactly 10 years.
What brought this on? What fired you up to do this?
Well, I'd worked with a fellow named Captain Charles Moore. I was his director of research for his foundation, and he had found the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. So I was working with him, and very quickly I realized that despite the scientific publications that we had done, the public was still really unaware of plastic impacts on the oceans. So we did this stunt to raise awareness, but then to begin a new organization called the Five Gyres Institute, which we began because there was no one going south of the equator. There was no one going to western Pacific or eastern Atlantic on the north side. So there was a lot of uncharted ocean territory to cross. So the Five Gyres Institute, we began the number one question, how much trash is in the world's oceans?
So fast forward, it's been 10 years. What's changed?
What's changed is really global awareness. You know, I had the chance last year to speak at the UN Oceans event at the UN building in New York. Just recently at the Southeast Asia, there was a symposium where 14 countries were speaking about it. It's an international dialogue. The EU is about to ban, or wants to ban, single-use plastics. Across the United States, we're seeing bag bans. So in the last 10 years has been the growth of an international movement to get a handle on this plastic pollution problem.
And we're hearing a lot about the plastic straws.
Yes, finally. I call those the escape artists. Plastic bags, straws, polystyrene, like those lunch clamshells you get, styrofoam cups and plates, cup lids. The single-use throwaway packaging is what's clogging our oceans, especially in the nearshore environment. So to see those now being questioned, like, do we really need this straw? As people understand that the full life cycle of a straw causes a lot of harm to our oceans, that people are saying, okay, we don't really need this. How can we replace the service a straw provides? And we're seeing people go paper or people go without, and it works.
Just the other day, too, we heard about contact lenses.
Yes, I mean, that's one example. I really haven't thought much about that. It's one example of a single-use throwaway product. But we don't see many of those, you know, littering our beaches. Now, I would guess that those do get flushed. You know, they're washed down sinks and down toilets. And I know in sewage treatment we find things, everything from microbeads to, you know, tampon applicators and other small things, plastic toothpicks and Q-tips that get flushed. On the beaches, it's largely consumer plastics, single-use, often thin film packaging, potato chip bags, single-use plastic bags and straws. So, you know, I guess when you point to contact lenses, I'm thinking all of the possible avenues for plastic to enter our environment through these single-use applications.
And I'm just thinking, too, of what the fish are consuming.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, when you go where the fish are, when you go out to the middle of the ocean, what we find is mostly fishing gear. First of all, it's designed to last. You know, it's much longer than a styrofoam cup might. So when we did our surveys, and I've crossed the Pacific about four times now, we always find a lot of fishing gear. And almost every report from my colleagues, other scientists, they'll say at least half are fishing nets. The other half are mostly fishing buoys and random bits of line and little floats, and fishing crates for holding fish and buckets. What's amazing is in the middle of the ocean, I don't find the plastic bags and the cups and the straws. But I do find lots of those in the nearshore environment. So somewhere between, you know, Hawaii's coastline and the middle of Pacific Gyre, something happens to the plastic bags and the straws. When I do find them, they've been bitten like crazy by fish. They're shredded by marine life nibbling on them. So my suspicion is that these single-use plastics are becoming microplastics very quickly when they leave our shorelines, from the sun breaking them down and the fish tearing them apart.
I know when we have covered beach cleanups, you know, we do see a lot of the fishing buoys and the plastics off of Japanese ships. It really does make you think about how much there is that's out there in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, when we published our first estimate, about 3 years ago, we published the first estimate of all plastics in all oceans. And that number was about 270,000 tons from 5.25 trillion particles. And most of that, more than 90%, is all microplastics, smaller than a grain of rice. So in the oceans, it's really, by count, it's the small stuff. It's just everywhere. Now, I like to say it's akin to a smog of microplastics over oceans, kind of like the smog of smoke over big cities. There's a smog of plastics covering our oceans. So when you go walk on the beach there in Oahu or on the Big Island, any of the Hawaiian islands, you will find a little trail of small plastic particles right along the high tide line. That's that smog of the sea getting kicked back on shoreline.
So as you mark this anniversary, what's your hope?
My hope this anniversary, I mean, it has been 10 years, an amazing 10 years since we landed our junk raft on Oahu. And I can tell you, I think we set a record for the first airplane to float across the ocean. And at that point, I mean, I remember Hawaii was considering, you know, plastic bag bans, looking at styrofoam and straws. Now, 10 years later, Hawaii is a leader. Hawaii as a state was the first to really ban plastic bags. County by county, island by island, you ban plastic bags first. California is next. Other states are following. So when I look back on these 10 years, I really feel optimistic now. I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago, standing there in Waikiki, having just arrived. But now, I'll be there tomorrow, and I'll stay on that same beach in the same spot in Waikiki, and I can put a smile on my face knowing that there are thousands, tens of thousands of people that care, that are doing something about it, at the community level, are looking to zero waste our communities, are looking to end the single-use throwaway habit our culture has. I see change happening, and it makes me full of optimism. So this is where I think people are waking up to the true value of plastics. I mean, I'm not anti-plastics. It's great for electronics in hospitals and for many durable goods like car bumpers and lightweight airplanes, safety equipment. But for the single-use throwaway application and many other applications, plastic is the wrong material. The full life cycle includes greenhouse gases as sunlight is breaking down plastics, releasing those GHGs. Things have got a lot of microplastics in the oceans that are absorbing things like pesticides that are floating our oceans. They're absorbing other chemicals, flame retardants. These things stick to plastics in high concentrations. When animals eat them, they're able to desorb those chemicals off the plastics. And then those plastics, they create economic harm. They create urban blight. They're navigational hazards as big nets. I'm sure you could easily find a sailor or a fisherman there in Hawaii who's had their props tangled by fishing gear. So there is this full life cycle of plastic that goes beyond our consumption of a bag or a bottle. But there is a life cycle that causes more harm than the benefits we get from those products. And that's where the world's waking up.
How are we doing on the companies that actually manufacture these plastics?
Well, that's where it gets really challenging, because of course these companies, they want to stay in business, and they've enjoyed a 4-6% growth rate every year since the 1950s. That's a tremendous profit, and they're not going to let go of that very easily. What we're asking them to do, what the industry to do, is to embrace what we call a circular economy. So what that means, it's contrast to linear. The linear economy means that we make stuff, we break stuff, and then we burn or we bury it. That's been the linear model since I was a kid. I grew up in Louisiana, where I remember there was an incinerator near my house. I would see trash go from the store where we bought it to my house, to the garbage can, to the incinerator, burned, and a puff of smoke in the sky. That's a linear economy. Recycling in our country, unfortunately, in the United States, it doesn't work. We recycle less than 10% of the plastic we make. If we want to embrace a circular economy, which means things come back to the producer, they come back into the system of reuse, then we have to design things with that in mind. With the design for recycling, design for easily dismantling a product, design for repairing and reusing the things that we buy. And that is where we work with companies. And we work with companies that understand and embrace the new business model of the circular economy. Great companies like Patagonia, lots of surf companies are embracing this philosophy. We're seeing companies, look at Lush Cosmetics, for example, are saying, okay, if we're going to make something, we got to make sure it doesn't cause harm. And the materials that we produce, we want to get them back in our hands so we can do something with them.
When you were out at sea for 88 days, was there any one thing you were struck by?
That's a big question, because I spent 88 days thinking about, you know, making sure we got to Oahu safely. My co-navigator, Joel Pascal, he used to live there in Hawaii for a good 10-15 years. He's a good sailor, so if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have made it all the way to Oahu.
Were you just worried? Were you worried that the raft wouldn't hold up?
Of course, I knew that if we missed Oahu, that we were headed for Japan, and I don't think we'd make it intact. The raft was constantly breaking down. You know, the ocean loves to tear things apart. The ocean loves to take things that are moving, you know, to hinges and nuts and bolts, and just rust them, oxidize them, and break them. The ocean doesn't have much mercy on boats. So a homemade raft where you got a bunch of 15,000 plastic bottles floating in an airplane, it's all tied together, constantly cracking. But, you know, I had some beautiful moments. I can remember one moment halfway across, just thinking, this is going to be a long trip. We're going to run out of food. I remember at like 2 o'clock in the morning, a storm just passed over me, and it soaked me to the bone. And it was a pretty intense storm. We dropped the sails, and the wind was spinning us around, and the storm passed. Pulled up the sails. The moon was behind me. The clouds were in front of me. And I saw a rainbow. It was in shades of gray. It was a moonbow. And it almost brought tears to my eyes. It was just me. Joel was asleep. It was just me and the ocean enjoying this moment, this beauty. And I'll never forget it. And other moment was I remember watching animals interact, watching frigate birds. They have a big red pouch under their bill and their black feathers, hovering above the ocean, and watching flying fish being chased out of the waves by mahi-mahi. When the flying fish would jump out, the birds would catch them. They're sorry for the flying fish, but to watch this spectacle of life before me, I've never seen anywhere else.
And that was a taste of what you'll hear tonight at a screening of a documentary about the 88 Days at Sea on a Junk Raft. We were talking with Marcus Erickson, who made the Pacific Crossing on a plastic bottle boat. Erickson works with the Five Gyres Institute and continues the effort to find a solution to our global growing plastic pollution problem. The screening tonight will be at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, and it's a Books and Spirits event put on by the University of Hawaii Better Tomorrow Speaker Series and a dozen other different sponsors. Advance registration for the free event is required.